We want to thank y'all for tuning in to Run Up the Numbers.
Every Monday at 8 a.m. And if you miss us in the morning, you can catch the replay in the afternoon at 2 p.m. and again at 8 p.m. You can also check out the shows archived over at thenumbers.fm. And for you early risers, every Monday morning at 6 a.m. at 107.1 X-Ray FM.
Make sure you're following us on all the social medias, because we out here. Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, House Party, YouTube,
you know it.
Twitch, Black Planet, MySpace,
hey.
Tinder, and catch us ticking on the top, along with Google Plus.
In this episode, we'll be putting you up on coronavirus data will now be sent directly to the White House and Russian hackers conducting cyber attacks on COVID-19 vaccine developers.
Also, Google tearing down barriers for tech-related job applicants, Portland Public Schools' fall plans.
Reparations for the sins of the nation. But first, let's get into the Portland Police Association office getting set on fire. The mayor blames the president, and the president blames the mayor. After some protesters broke into the police association office and set it on fire, the protest was declared a riot. The police reported being injured by rocks and paint-filled balloons in North Portland, while downtown at the Justice Center, the protective fencing was removed. It's been about 50 nights straight of demonstrations calling attention to racial inequality and police brutality. Some protests have been peaceful, others violent. Some Portland community leaders and activists held a press conference joined by the PPA to ask for the violence and destruction to end. Much of the anger is in response to federal officers without any type of identification arresting protesters, snatching them up and putting them in unmarked vehicles. Friday, Oregon's U.S. attorney requested an investigation of these federal officers. The president is quoted as saying, "We're trying to help Portland, not hurt it," he tweeted Sunday morning. Their leadership has for months lost control of the anarchists and its agitators. They are missing in action. We must protect federal property and our people. These were not merely protesters. These are the real deal, whatever that means. Mayor Ted Wheeler says this federal response has caused more harm than good. People are being literally scooped off the street into unmarked vans, rental cars, and apparently they're being denied probable cause and they're denied due process. They don't even know who's pulling them into the vans. There are dozens, if not hundreds, of federal troops descending upon our city, and what they're doing is they are sharply escalating the situation. Their presence here is actually leading to more violence and more vandalism. Governor Kate Brown described the arrest as a blatant abuse of power by the federal government, and that they should remove all federal officers from our streets. The mayor and Governor Brown want federal officers gone, and Democratic Senator Jeff Merkley echoed their criticisms in a tweet. Authoritarian governments, not democratic republics, send unmarked authorities after protesters. After admitting to being one of the agencies involved in the arrests, the U.S. Customs and Border Protection Agency issued a statement. Violent anarchists have organized events in Portland over the last several weeks with willful intent to damage and destroy federal property, as well as injure federal officers and agents, the agency said in a statement to CNN. These criminal actions will not be tolerated. Mark Morgan, the CBP commissioner, tweeted the agency will continue to arrest violent criminals that are destroying federal property, and went on to say you will not see names on their uniforms because these same violent criminals use this information to target them and their families, putting both at risk. As acting commissioner, I will not let that happen. Acting DHS Secretary Chad Wolf, during his visit to Portland, tweeted, DHS officers were assaulted with lasers and frozen water bottles from violent criminals attempting to tear down federal property. Two officers were injured. Our men and women in uniform are patriots. Governor Brown responded, his response showed me he's on a mission to provoke confrontation for political purposes. He's putting both Oregonians and local law enforcement officers in harm's way. So
much coded language.
Bruh.
Patriots. Coded language. Coded language.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Speaking in all the dog whistles. I mean,
yes.
It's pretty obvious. We are in election season. The election cycle is about to begin. President is trying to tie up every loose end he can, trying to rig any victories he can to, have something to talk about at these rallies that he shouldn't be having because we're in the middle of a pandemic. Like, it's ridiculous. And honestly, like, shout out to all of the young people that are out there. Shout out to all of our allies that are out there putting their bodies on the line. Shout out to people that are traveling from other states because from what I'm hearing, the numbers just keep getting larger and larger. There was a report last night that it was close to 1,000 people down there at the Justice Center. Like,
yeah,
the numbers
are
swelling.
I saw some footage last night, video footage last night, and that was one of the most intense ones I've seen yet as far as just the amount of people. But also seeing the video of the interactions between the hop-out boys,
right,
and cyclists.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. That was wild. That was real wild. I've been getting a lot of texts and people reaching out to me on social media, just like homies from the East Coast, like, yo, we checking in. Is everything good? Because this is national news. You know what I'm saying? The president has pretty much waged war on Portland. It's crazy.
You know, for people that are not familiar with Portland, the way that it's painted, this city is on fire. And having to try to let people know it's a fairly small vicinity where this
right.
stuff is happening.
Right.
Not that it couldn't or, you know, branch out, but it's not people hanging from rooftops and running around setting lawns on fire.
Thank goodness.
Yeah, thank goodness. But, yeah, it's just a lot, man.
Yeah, like over the weekend, so there was stuff happening downtown and, you know, up north. So it's like, I don't know, man. I feel like this is just the beginning, honestly.
Definitely.
Yeah.
And as it keeps getting poked and prodded, and now mm-hmm. with the national attention, mm-hmm. you now have, you know, definitely people that are for the cause, but also people just showing up to now be a part of whatever's going on, to be spectators and agitators.
Absolutely.
Well, we got North Carolina saying yes to the reparations.
Hey.
And we know discussions of reparations has been a long contested hot topic. A 2019 Gallup poll found that 67% of Americans oppose reparations, although 73% of African Americans said they support them. The City Council of Asheville, North Carolina, has unanimously voted to give financial reparations to black people amid a surge in debate about the issue. The bill was passed with a 7-0 vote this past Tuesday, just days after the county's health board declared racism a public health crisis.
Come on.
That's big.
That's huge.
Asheville is not the first in approving reparations for black people. Evanston, Illinois, approved a reparations measure in 2019. Evanston has implemented taxing the legal cannabis industry to help the black community in the form of contributing $10 million of those tax dollars to the program. So what do these reparations look like in Asheville? What it will not be is a direct deposit, paper check, cash app, or any other direct form of payment. According to the bill, the money will go towards affordable housing, business and home ownership, and career opportunities. Essentially, strategies to grow equity and generational wealth, closing the gaps in healthcare, education, employment and pay, neighborhood safety, and fairness within the criminal justice system.
Okay.
Hundreds of years of black blood spilled that basically fills the cup we drink from today, said Councilman Keith Young, one of the two black council members and a sponsor of the bill. It's simply not enough to remove statues. Black people in this country are dealing with issues that are systematic in nature. He said this after the bill passed.
That is groundbreaking. That's amazing.
Yes.
That's amazing. Now, what I'm curious about, said 73% of African Americans said they support the bill. What's up with the other 27%? What y'all doing, man?
That's the shoulda never gave you money crowd.
Bro, what business do you have not supporting this? What are you doing?
They were all at the Orange Man rallies.
Because here's the worst part. They're going to benefit from it.
That part.
All right, let me ask you real quick, though. As you were researching this story, how disappointed were you that it wasn't going to be no cash payouts?
You know, the interesting thing is that when I read this, of course, because that's been the lead, the top of the discussion has always been the money. So, with hearing that, that was one of the first questions that popped up was like, are they about to hand over a bag?
Right.
Then I was like, nah, that just seems too complicated on how you would even figure a number.
Right.
The 7 acres and a mule with all of its inflation.
Right.
Come on. You know, so, and I figured, though, what they were going to do was put money towards exactly what they did. Yeah,
different programs.
But there still was a little piece of me, though, that was like, you know, you can throw a little 12 racks or something in the account, you know.
Let me get a little cheddar. Dang.
A little something, you know. Just wet my beak.
Just get me even real quick. Just get me even. You know what I'm saying?
Right. That I feel like it should come along with erasing student loan debt.
Yes, absolutely.
I'll take that.
Listen, okay, let's erase that student loan debt. Let's get this credit debt up. Let's get right. Let me get my score up. Like, at first I was like, do we need to move? What's happening, Ken? Do we need to relocate right quick?
Look, because we can do all this remote.
Oh my God. Okay, so Russian hackers conduct cyber attacks on COVID-19 vaccine developers. Hackers linked to Russian intelligence have been launching cyber attacks on organizations working on COVID-19 testing. You ready for this? The National Cybersecurity Center, based in the UK, identified a hacker group by the name of Cozy Bear. All right. I haven't ran no hacker groups lately. Nevertheless, a Russian one. Maybe this got lost in translation. Because it's a Russian hacker group. Maybe it's not really Cozy Bear and they messing up. But okay. This group has been attacking targets not only in the healthcare sector, but diplomatic, think tank, and the government, with main objectives to steal intellectual property. Yeah. Intelligence officials in the U.S. and Canada have issued warnings about these attackers. The group is using a combination of malware and phishing techniques in their attacks. Malware is a software secretly installed in your computer, which collects information and sends it back to whoever installed it. Phishing is incredibly effective because it's so deceptive. Bars, you see me. You see me. Get you with that Don DeMarco.
Don DeMarco. Bang, bang.
Phishing convinces you to sign into a fake version of an account that you may have using your real login information. For example, you may receive an email saying one of your social media accounts or website logins have been hacked, and they need you to sign in so you can fix it. Always double-check the email address that these emails are coming from. It's a trap. The hackers didn't appear to be trying to sabotage the research, but steal the data. Basically, the Russians are trying to steal everyone else's homework. There are no reports as to whether they succeeded or not. We condemn these despicable attacks against those doing vital work to combat the coronavirus. NCSC Director of Operations Paul Chichester said in a statement, "Working with our allies, the NCSC is committed to protecting our most critical assets, and our top priority at this time is to protect the health sector. We would urge organizations to familiarize themselves with the advice we've published to help defend their networks."
This is why STEM is important.
Yes. When's the first time you got caught up in some phishing?
I
knock on that wood.
I knock on this wood just based on, I think, because of my internet usage and learning through trying to find out how to trial software before purchasing it back in my younger days. It taught me a lot of the tricks of noticing what's not for real on a page.
So in translation, then, what you're saying is you don't get hacked, you do the hacking.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
You like, get hacked. Who, me?
But I've been lucky enough that I've not had the only time is that something has happened. It's been where a company is like, data was compromised. Everybody change your stuff.
Right.
But personally, I've not been in a situation where I've had to do anything, or my account was taken over, or you know, somebody had my computer held for ransom.
Yo,
I've been lucky.
That's the other
I've
one.
Been lucky.
Ransomware yeah. is
that
serious.
Ransomware is rough.
Yo, I'm knocking on anything, wood, titanium, whatever I can knock on. Bruh, yes. I don't want no issues with ransomware. So, listeners, for those of you that don't know what ransomware is, it's exactly what it sounds like. Someone puts a virus in your computer, and then they send you an email asking for a ransom to get the virus off your computer. This happens to corporations all the time. Like, corporations getting hit two or three times a year with ransomware. Mm-hmm. That stuff is vicious.
Which is a big reason why they don't want you at work jumping onto websites that are non-work related.
I mean, hello. Hello.
Doing all the downloads.
Listen. Whew. Oh, man. That's a, I ain't going to comment on that one. Yeah. Well, I've definitely done my share. Because, listen, our jobs be having the good internet. You want to, you know.
Yeah. Super download speeds.
Bruh, torrents. Quick, fast.
Look. Immediately.
So the first time I encountered phishing was actually, this is how far back. It was on MySpace. That was the first time I encountered phishing. Oh. Like, I was in MySpace, and then another screen popped up saying that I was logged out and I needed to log back in. And it was a mock-up of MySpace. It looked exactly like it, except it might have been, like, MySpace with an extra E or extra C dot com. And because of the all the colors and frames and everything look exactly the same, I didn't notice that misspelling at a website. So, of course, I'm like, okay, I don't know what kicked me out. Let me log back in real quick. Boom, they got me. Next thing I know, somebody's using my inbox to send, what was it, videos? No. They were sending ads trying to sell sunglasses to everyone in my friends list.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
See, and that's one of those, even when, because I get inboxes on the book, actually, from people that I'm like, nope, like just the starting word, and I'm like, no, I'll just delete it from there.
Right.
Because I'm like, yeah, you've definitely been hacked. And it seems that it runs rampant in the 50 and over club.
Yes, it does.
Yeah. Y'all got to quit clicking all the links.
Y'all got to chill out, man. Y'all got to chill all the way out.
Well, in line with this cyber stuff, Google announces 100,000 scholarships for online certificates.
Amazing.
Big Google committed to funding 100,000 need-based scholarships for individuals enrolled in any of the data analytics, project management, and user experience certificate programs, and will be awarding over $10 million in grants to YWCA, Empower, and JFF. Three nonprofits that partner with Google to provide workforce development to women, veterans, and underrepresented Americans. These certificates have been created and are being taught by Google employees and do not require a college degree to enroll. These courses, which are offered via online platforms such as Coursera and take 3 to 6 months to complete, will be treated as the equivalent of a four-year degree for roles within the Google company. This is not revenue generating for Google, says Google Vice President Lisa Gevelber, who leads Grow with Google and Google for Startup and served as the company's America's Chief Marketing Officer. There's a small cost from the Coursera platform itself. The current pricing is $49 a month, but we want to ensure that anyone who wants to have this opportunity can have it. While college degrees have tons of values, they are not accessible to everyone, says Gevelber. And we believe that the absence of a college degree should not be a barrier to economic stability. When we first built the IT certificate, we built it for our own use, says Gevelber. We wanted to diversify our own workforce, and we knew to do that, we needed to create an on-ramp for underrepresented and non-traditional applicants. We thought a certificate would be a way to accomplish that goal, and it did.
Yo, that's...
This, I am all for this.
Absolutely.
As a person who has done MOOC courses, who has spent money on getting certificates, rather it was lynda.com, I've done things on Coursera. Mm-hmm. Putting this into context where, let's say even at, you know, it was 45 a month or whatever, 49, I mean, so run that to 50 for a six-month program, that's $300. That is the equivalent, or would be seen through this company as the equivalent of a four-year degree. Mm-hmm. Now, outside of that, you have these different nonprofits in which you can possibly get a scholarship to run it, but I think that this now starts a snowball, hopefully, within the tech community in general.
Yeah.
Because I think up until this point, there's been a lot of, you know, do certificates have the type of weight that they should versus a computer science degree?
Right.
or the boot camps, do they have the same weight? And this is definitely setting people up for a type of success, I believe.
Oh, absolutely. This is erasing barriers, man. Straight up. Yes. Like, this is amazing. I dare say I might, I don't know where I even think I had the time to. But I definitely want to. I'm going to look into it, man.
The good thing about some of these courses is that you have the option to stay on track with their weekly updates as if you were going through an actual course at a college. Mm. But they also have the do it at your pace. And just when you're done, that's when it comes out.
That's what I'm talking about. It will be done at my pace, B. I love it.
Yes.
I love it. So coronavirus data will now be sent directly to the White House. As of last Wednesday, COVID-19 hospital data will be reported directly to the White House instead of the CDC. This move means less transparency and that reported numbers will now fall more in line with the way this administration has been downplaying the pandemic. This is clearly political interference during an election cycle. The Assistant Secretary for Public Affairs, Michael Caputo, said in a statement that the new, faster, and complete data system is what our nation needs to defeat the coronavirus. And the CDC, an operating division of HHS, will certainly participate in this streamlined all-government response. They will simply no longer control it. The CDC's old hospital data gathering operation once worked well monitoring hospital information across the country, but it's an inadequate system today. This new database will not be open to the public, which makes things extremely difficult for researchers, health officials, and modelers who rely on this data to make projections and crucial decisions. Dr. Sanjay Gupta, that's the homie. I messes with Sanjay Gupta, B. He be telling it like it is. Dr. Sanjay Gupta, CNN's chief medical correspondent, expressed concern. What logic does this have, other than to take away the data from the epidemiologists that are the best in the world at looking at this data, making sense of it, translating it for people, versus giving it to the HHS? Former CDC Director Richard Besser said this is a step backwards. It's another example of CDC being sidelined. Not only should the data be coming to the CDC, but CDC should be talking to the public through the media every day. Warning that the data will be further politicized, he went on to say, one of the nice things about the CDC being in Atlanta, being away from Washington, is that we're able to avoid a lot of political pressure that you get when you're in D.C. The pandemic has already claimed the lives of more than 136,000 Americans. This all while Trump is pressuring governors to reopen schools despite the risks laid out by the CDC, warning that this move could be the highest risk of increasing the spread of the virus.
That this whole 2020 hasn't been a constant state of fear in a lot of ways. And watching these changes happen right before our eyes, where the transparency is no longer there, as you pointed out in this piece, like outside of that little BS line they gave trying to downplay the CDC. And along with all of the people who have access to this information, very intelligent, not just intelligent, but specifically.
Right.
In this area, this is what they do have been doing and giving this information to the people. Right. And the thing that has came up since this pandemic, it seems that the government is trying to say one thing while the CDC is telling us what they've came up with based on the data.
Absolutely.
And because those two things are different, now this.
Right.
What does that say? Like, who thinks this is going to work in the favor of the people?
We're talking about a dude that just let his homie out of jail, that just got his mans off. Roger Stone. This is the guy that is now in charge of the COVID numbers. Numbers that he said when things first started, it's now 15, soon it'll be 5, then it'll be down to 0. He's literally about to do that right now. Like, if you don't have a problem with this decision, hey man, more power to you. Send your kids to school. I don't know what else to say. It's super reckless. And like you said, as if 2020 wasn't bad enough. Like, for real, this is, oh my gosh. It's like watching a slow car accident.
That part, speaking of school stuff, I'm going to give our local Portland residents an update on Portland Public Schools' preliminary plan for the 2020-2021 school year. PPS updated families about its plans heading into the fall semester with COVID still roaring along. The new plan will be a five-day-a-week hybrid in-person and online curriculum mix. The in-person part of the plan will only be the case if public health experts give the green light for safety to open up the buildings to students and staff. The letter describes the preliminary plan as follows. We're proposing a model in which the first 2 weeks of school, September 2nd through 11th, would be dedicated to a number of important foundational, social, emotional, and academic components to ensure students, educators, and families are ready for the learning curve ahead. These activities will be conducted virtually, online, and include teachers individually connecting with students, multiple opportunities and ways for families to become familiar with the learning technology that will be used by their children, training for teachers on all teaching and learning technology and new health protocols, social emotional engagement in order to help ease anxiety and stress of the past months, ensuring technology is available so that every student has a working device and online access, especially our new to PPS students. Health and wellness processes are practiced and in place prior to students entering the building. PPS said in its release that this two-week period will allow students and teachers to adjust to new technology and help everyone become comfortable with the new schedules. For pre-K through 8th grade, PPS is working on an A-B schedule. Cohort A would attend school in person on Mondays and Tuesdays. Cohort B would attend school in person on Thursdays and Fridays. Wednesday will be spent sanitizing classrooms between cohorts and for continuing professional development and training for teachers and staff. The AB model would allow for half of the students to be in a classroom at once to allow for social distancing. PPS is considering a similar model for the middle school. As far as high school, PPS is considering allowing high school students to take 4 classes a semester for a total of 8 classes a year. It is considering an AB schedule as well. Allowing students to take 4 classes at one time is an attempt to help students focus on their studies as they work on a schedule that's hybrid, in-person, and online classes. For more information about PPS's plans for the fall semester, visit his website to see the entire letter.
Yo.
What are your thoughts on this?
I'm encouraged. This is great information to hear. Like, the fact that they're exploring a combination of in-person and online classes sounds great to me, especially with these alternating days, taking that middle day off. It's like, this sounds like they're taking it seriously. Ultimately, though, I mean, you know, depending on how serious things get, and just, you know, thinking about the future of all of this, the time that the kids are spending at home learning, it's not really like every home and every situation doesn't allow our kids to have like their own space to like go in a room or a study or a den and make that their classroom. Like, our kids are at the dining room table with laptops going to school that last semester. That's what it was. But I was just like, yo, as you were giving us that news, I was like, yo, wouldn't it be dope though to actually have like a designated area in the house that was literally like, this is your classroom, you know what I'm saying, to have everything they need to be able to take these classes online and interact with their teachers. Like, that would just be so ill, you know. That may be what the future looks like at some point.
You know, I think about it in a way of the education model and the curriculum as it is, and how that can be shifted to maximize the at-home learning, especially for your pre-K through elementary, where the things that go on in a day-to-day, being able to teach through that, cooking, cleaning, chore, like things that can incorporate all your science, your basic math, English. It just, there's a way. And I know there's someone out there who, I know there's probably people who have done homeschooling.
Right.
You know, this is kind of one of the places to kind of lean on, you know, some of that information. But I'd be interested in seeing how, you know, some of that could fit, because I do believe, you know, even with some of the concerns, like my daughter who will be going to the 10th grade has about the model that's similar to this going on up in Federal Way, where there's classes she feels like she would need to be there
in
for
person, right,
and on a continual, because at home it's not going to be the same type of help that she would actually need, and feels like that could, you know, hurt her in the long run.
Right.
And of course, we all have to see what this actually looks like. Of course, we're just seeing it in writing and thinking about what we've been used to is different. But yeah, at least they are thinking forward. But I definitely think some of the teaching, the way that curriculum is set up is going to be getting changed over these next few years, as we go through, if this is going to be the shift and we're going to lean more towards this, which I do believe, regardless of when the vaccine comes, the way that we've kind of set this up to take some of the pressure off of being in a class all day. I think there's going to be, even with a vaccine, we would still have parents fearful of just throwing their kids back into the mix.
Oh yeah.
So it's gonna be that trail off is gonna be long.
Yeah. This is
that's gonna cause for the shift.
Yeah, this is a really good start. I mean, I understand the concerns of, you know, this brand new challenge of having to learn anything from home, you know, for high school. Like, you know, Kaylin, she's going into ninth grade, you know, so this would be her first year of high school. And the need and familiarity of being in a classroom, being surrounded by students, and just that human interaction, I get it. Here's the thing, though. I think getting our kids used to less human interaction is preparing them for what the real world might be moving forward. You know what I'm saying? Like, this
interesting take.
Yeah, this might be it. Y'all might be getting, you know, the best training for what the new normal is going to look like, because that is what we're experiencing right now. Our human interaction has been greatly decreased. So yeah, y'all about to really just grow up in the new normal where you're just having less human interaction. And then we just need to come up with, you know what I'm saying? And we just need to come up with ways to, I guess, make it more livable and just kind of normalize it. Like, you know, even from like an employment standpoint, I believe it was Google that was giving their employees a work from home stipend to purchase office furniture for your home office. You're still working for us. You know what I'm saying? Like, we can't provide you a workspace anymore, but we can give you money to buy ergonomic equipment and chairs and all of that, so you can continue to work from home. Like, that's the direction we need to be moving in right now.
And I know, we're not to go on a tangent, but I did read an article about a couple of companies claiming that they've seen the productivity shoot up since this work from home has been implemented.
Interesting.
So, yeah, maybe that'll be a story for later.
Maybe. Make sure you check in with us every Monday at 8 a.m., 2 p.m., and 8 p.m. as we sit down and run up the numbers.
Run up the numbers.
Arrest Jonathan Mattingly, the cop that killed Breonna Taylor.
Hosted by Ken Jones and DJ Ambush.
Arrest Brett Hankinson, the cop that killed Breonna Taylor.
Special thanks to our researchers and writers, Shireen Hassan, Sham Shawan, Hannah, Alicia, and Joseph Watson.
Arrest Miles Cosgrove, the cop that killed Breonna Taylor.
Oh, and music by C's.
Arrest the cops that killed Breonna Taylor, fam.
And convict them.
Yes. We out.